I would have never imagined that this is where I would be in you know, 5 years from now. I could have never imagined that this is what I would be doing. But yeah, you just take that one step at a time forwards, learn, make, repeat, and crazy things can happen.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Golden Hour Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Mays, and I'm coming to you again in my quarantined home studio. Today's guest is Maddie Hapoya, who is a full-time YouTuber and filmmaker based out of Toronto, Canada, who joined us via the internet from his home studio. Maddie has built a following of over 865,000 subscribers on YouTube at the time of this recording and has garnered millions and millions of views. Coming from a freelance cinematographer background, Maddie teaches people how to make a career out of filmmaking and photography. With gear reviews, tutorials, cinematic vlogs, and documentary films, Maddie's content is sure to entertain and educate, and it's obvious why he has grown so much in the last 3 years. Before we get to my conversation with Maddie, I would like to remind you all to please subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts and leave a review if you haven't already. All right, without any further ado, let's listen in on my conversation with Maddie. All right, so we're here with the one, the only, Maddie Hapoya. How you doing, man?
Good. Have you ever tried to look up my name on Google?
Yeah.
I'm almost the one and only, but if you look it up on Google, I'm not the only.
In fact, the very first result, Finnish serial killer.
That's right. That is,
your website does pop up first in Google search, so good job on the SEO on that. But then the second link down is a Wikipedia link talking about a Finnish serial killer, which we must clarify is not you. It is not the same person. You have not murdered anyone. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Put it on the record.
The worst part is that at one point, if you looked up Maddie Hapoya, it would show a picture of me and below it say Finnish serial killer.
Yes, that's right. I remember that actually. I remember you tweeting about that.
It was terrible. That's like my life mission now, to bury that search result.
I mean, to be honest, it sounds like this is a reputable serial killer, so he's going to probably always live on in the history books. But
I think he's Finland's like worst serial killer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I wow. think so, or at least one of the worst.
Oh, geez. Did your parents know that when they named you?
I don't think so. Or not. They weren't paying attention, at least.
So how are you doing over there, man? And what's going on over there right now?
I mean, I'm surviving. I think I'm doing as good as you can. We're not on like full lockdown yet, but like pretty much everything is closed down except for essential services. People are supposed to be staying inside. So we've just been just started the fourth week of staying inside. I've only been at the grocery store a couple times, and then I go for runs and walks with my son, but like we stay away from everybody. That's been the life for 3 weeks now.
Yeah, totally. Same here. I mean, in California, it's probably a little bit more lockdown than what you guys are dealing with, but man, it's a crazy time. And I mean, with that in mind, let's mention the way that you're recording your audio. Can you explain your audio setup right now?
It's like the most high quality ever. I mean, it's not terrible. That's how I would normally record my vlogs. It's just literally my EOS R with a Rode VideoMic Pro Plus on there. That's it.
This is definitely the first podcast interview that we've done on this show recorded on a on-camera mic, so that's great. If you guys like the sound of it, maybe we'll switch over. Maybe this is a new trend. Maybe you're starting a new trend.
Hopefully it doesn't sound terrible.
I'm sure it's fine. I'll just throw some EQ on it, and it'll be great.
Oh, yeah. Fix it in post.
Dude, well, thank you so much for being on the show, for being a part of the Golden Hour podcast. You've worked with Polar Pro over the years and been a valuable member of the influencer team that we have at Polar Pro. You're a big part of the Peter McKinnon launch with the VND and all that kind of stuff. So we're happy to have you on the show, man. I wish it was under different circumstances and we could, you know, do this in person. But with what's going on, obviously, this is the best we can do. But
what better way to spend the time?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of interesting. Like, how have you been doing? I know the vlogs that you've been doing have I'm sure have been a good way to keep you busy, right?
Yeah, I have not felt boredom once yet, just because I've been kind of daily vlogging, but then taking weekends off, just because I did daily vlogging as an experiment last summer. I'm just fascinated by daily vlogging. It's probably one of the big things that got me into YouTube in the first place. And I realized that I did like a month or so straight every single day posting a video, and you really quickly realize how A, it's not healthy. You need a break, you need a day off. And B, it starts to take over your whole like mind, like your thought world, because you're always thinking of like, oh, what am I going to do today? What am I going to do tomorrow? Oh, I got to finish this edit. Like, how am I going to make this work? We got to travel here. So like everything kind of like you're doing your normal stuff, but everything revolves around the vlog, or it starts to really quickly. So taking little breaks here and there helps to not let it take over.
I think doing what you've done now twice, doing kind of like bursts, like concentrated bursts of vlogging for a period of time, is a smart way to do it. And I know for me, when I did vlogs before I really was doing Kinetika, it really taught me a lot. And I think a lot of people sometimes, when they want to be a creator, a YouTuber, they watch all these tutorials and like read reviews and blah, blah, blah. But by actually just going out and making stuff, it's so incredible how much you learn and how much you can refine your skills by literally just doing it every day. Have you found that to be true for you?
Yeah, I think there's two parts. One part is like the daily gratification you get in making something and posting it. Like it's a good feeling, like finishing a video from start to finish and then also posting it. So these vlogs, actually, I have an editor, but I've been filming and editing everything by myself.
Nice.
Matt, my editor's kind of been on like a learning binge right now.
Nice.
And it's been super fun. Just like, I think I didn't realize how much I miss, even just the, like, that's weird. Just like that last bit of like exporting a video and posting it. Mm-hmm. Usually Matt would export, do the final export and upload it. And then I would just like finish off the details. But that last little bit, it's like, it makes you feel like you've accomplished something. So, so that's like a really cool part. But then I think the biggest thing I've learned is storytelling. And that's maybe not like the first thing that people would think about, but like you're literally, especially right now, I'm literally stuck at home every single day. And I think I've made 19 videos now, all at home every single day. It's essentially the same. There's no like, I'm traveling today or I'm meeting up with friends. It's literally me, Kai, my wife. Kai's my son, and yeah,
not,
our home.
Not
and,
like, Kai W.
That's it.
If anybody's confused.
Yeah.
Not Kai
yeah.
W. He's not hanging not out him. With you. Yeah.
He's not quarantining with us, no.
It's your son. Yeah, I think in a way, it's probably a refreshing and good thing for all creators to really pause. You know, we got no meetings, no travel, like you said. We're able to really think about who am I? What am I doing? What type of stuff do I like? And shooting stuff in your home is, in a way, having that limitation can make you really experiment and do even more creative things. I think a lot of times when you have a barrier of some type or restrictions, and you work within those restrictions, like staying home, you can get really creative because you don't have options to do whatever you want. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the challenge every day. It's like, okay, what kind of story can I tell? How do I make this different from yesterday? But also there's this aspect that I really like. I think YouTube has kind of moved on from the vlogging era, the golden era of vlogging, when people like Casey Neistat were just massively growing. But I miss that. I miss that, especially when like crazy things like this, this thing that's happening around the world is like, it's insane. We've never experienced something like this. And we're all stuck at home and everybody's feeling lonely and like you're going through it all by yourself. But we're literally, the whole world is going through the same thing. Seeing vlogs, it's changed a little bit now with the Logan Pauls and that kind of stuff, but it's the realest form of reality TV there is. Of course, it's still edited and curated in some way, but it is still way more real than, you know, primetime TV, reality TV shows.
Yeah.
And seeing people and how they're dealing with it and seeing just like their normal daily life. Like people, like I've been showing my son in the vlogs more just because like he just pops up every 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. There's not much I can do about it. If I'm doing a camera review, he just comes in and like there's no point in me trying to fight him and be like go over there, like go, like he wants to be around me. And so like, I got to deal with that. And yeah. So he's been in the vlogs a lot and people have been loving that. And they get to see like a different part of my life that they yeah. normally don't get to see. And it's cool. Mm-hmm. I like giving that same feeling that I used to get from like a Yoon Olsen or Casey Neistat vlog of like feeling like I'm hanging out with somebody and I'm a part of this thing that's going on.
Yeah.
I miss that. And so that's kind of the big reason why I started doing these little daily vlogs again.
It's so cool, man. I can't agree more. I love the genre of YouTube. And I mean, your channel is not called Travel Feels anymore. It's called Matty Apoya. And that's what it's about. It's about you and people connect with you and your personality. And for people who aren't familiar with your journey on YouTube, can we talk about Travel Feels and kind of what you were doing with that? And then that transition from that to then making your brand about, you know, with your name on it instead.
Yeah, like before I started doing YouTube, I started in 2017. And before I started doing that, I was freelancing. So I, you know, somehow ended up in the freelancing world of making little commercials and stuff. And then it was starting to get like bigger. I was making good money already from it. And I was starting to shoot for bigger companies like Nike and San Pellegrino. And it wasn't like the big Nike commercials yet or anything like that. But already then I was realizing that the bigger this got, the less control I had over things. So like I would shoot something and it just, by the end of it, just didn't turn out the way that I would have wanted it to turn out. And mm-hmm. I didn't have the power to even say that, like, hey, this is how I would have had it, you know, this is how I would have done things. And then the other part of freelancing is that you're always waiting for somebody else to give you work. And I didn't like that feeling, especially as I was, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about buying a house and thinking about, you know, starting a family with kids and stuff like that. Like, I don't want that stress of not knowing, am I going to have any jobs next month? And that's literally how freelancing is a lot of times. So I started playing with passive incomes and I did some stock footage, put it on Film Supply. And then I made a course about wedding films and those were already doing pretty good without any audience. And then that's what kind of like got me into thinking like, hey, I could actually like make my own brand, essentially make my own thing. And the goal would be to not ever have to rely on somebody else to pay me or ask me to do something for them in order to get paid, that I could make the videos that I want to make and I could be self-sustaining essentially through passive incomes. And so 2017, I was like, all right, let's give this a go. And I started a channel called Travel Feels. And the idea was that it would be like a travel channel, but I don't want to travel all the time. So I'll do some tutorials around travel filmmaking and photography to kind of, you know, fill in the gaps when I'm not traveling. Mm-hmm. And so I made like a video about like, you know, I'm starting a YouTube channel. I'm going to start doing this full time sort of thing. And then my first tutorial was how to make GoPro look cinematic. And that was back when you would use GoPros on drones. And people yeah. always ask me like, how does your GoPro footage look like that? Like it doesn't look like a GoPro. And so I was like, oh, cool. I'll make a tutorial on that. And I think that's still to this day, my most viewed video on my channel. It just like, it didn't take off right away. It took like a couple weeks and then all of a sudden the algorithm picked it up and it just started yeah. popping. And it was like 15 subscribers a day, 30, 40, 50, 100, 200, 300 subs a Jeez. Day. And yeah, I think it was like,
yeah, 1.5 million views on that video, by the way.
Yeah, so I think it was like after 2 or 3 months, I was literally full-time YouTube. I wasn't doing any more freelance work other than like a random wedding or something that I had booked from like a year and a half before or something like that. And I think a lot of that has to do with my strategy for YouTube. It's never, so my strategy was, because I had this idea of like, I want to be, I'd never have to rely on other companies or people to give me work or to pay me. So I was like, okay, I need to maximize my revenue streams, as many passive income streams as possible that are under my control as much as possible. That's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, stock footage, affiliate links, Amazon links, a little bit of AdSense, a little bit of brand deal, digital products, courses, just like anything and everything that I could try, merch, whatever. I'm going to try it out and see what works. And then because I think I'm a little bit more logical, brained, like business minded, rather than I still don't feel like I'm in any way like an artist or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I focus on that side a lot, and I think that's probably the reason why I was able to go full-time YouTube so quickly within a couple months. Obviously with some luck also of growth, but...
Do you miss the kind of like freelance lifestyle and doing gigs and stuff like that, or have you totally just fallen in love with what you're doing now?
I miss a little bit of the getting to work with crews. Like, I don't get to do that as much in YouTube world. And I guess that's a little bit self-imposed. I could definitely work with crews more if I wanted to. But no, not at all. Like, the freedom I have nowadays, the point was that I would get to a place where I could now self-fund the documentaries that I want to shoot, or use the connections that I have to fund them, because I knew nobody was going to pay me to make my personal, you know, personal projects, the creative passion projects that I wanted to do. Nobody's going to pay me to do those. And if they did, they would warp it into some sort of ad for some company, and that wouldn't be true to the idea in the end. So I wanted to get to a place where I have my own brand that I can then use that to shoot personal projects, shoot documentaries, maybe like a series or a feature film. And now, after I've been doing this for three and a bit years now, I feel like I'm finally this year getting to the point where I'm like, okay, like, I think I'm in a pretty good place. I can actually start thinking about doing some bigger projects with maybe even crews, you know?
Yeah, I think that's so powerful and so cool. And, you know, people sometimes forget that this is a long-term career strategy that you've built, and you've built such a solid foundation now that you can continue to grow and experiment and do films and do whatever. And because you've got that audience base and that foundation that you've built over the last 3 years, even if you throw out an experimental thing, like, I mean, in a way, doing the vlogs is a little experimental. It may work or it may not, but it doesn't matter, because in a long-term, you know, viewpoint, if you look at your career over the next 20 years, you know, it's going to sustain itself and it'll continue to grow. So sometimes, you know, people can get caught up in the algorithm, the thumbnails, all that kind of stuff. And people forget that, you know, this is a long-term game, that, you know, you've still got a lot of life left. And I think YouTube is going to continue to be relevant for a very long time. I do not see anything at all coming close to it. So,
100%. I think that's one of the hardest things about YouTube, is that it is the long game and people don't necessarily realize that. Mm. And then growth can happen really quickly all of a sudden. And so it feels like, you know, it's a short game, but actually the hard part, to me, the hardest part about YouTube so far has been, once you have a little bit of success, just keeping it going. And there's this like weird pressure. You start looking at numbers more, and like one video will do worse, and then that affects your whole day and your mood, and you're like, why am I even making these? And then, you know, like, today's video is popping off and doing super well, and it's like, oh, like, I'm on top of the world. But I feel like that's the hard part, is like ignoring those feelings. And regardless if a video does bad or well, you know, bad or good, just continue to make videos. On to the next one. That's kind of me and if you know Peter McKinnon, that's what we always say. Yeah. Like, we'll send a screenshot of like a video that just doing terrible. And then it's just like, on to the next one. Like, and I don't think I know of a single YouTube channel that has consistently put out like decent, good content and not kept growing. Like, I think that's one of those fears that because YouTube, a lot of times in the beginning, has this like quick growth spurt phase where like all of a sudden you go from like no following to having a fairly big following, it also feels like the opposite could happen someday. Mm-hmm. That no matter how big you get, all of a sudden one day, you know, something happens and you start losing subs just as fast as it's, you know, just as fast as it came. And I don't, like everybody that I've talked to, I think still has that same kind of like fear in the back of their minds, even though it's so irrational in the end. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the curse of being a creative, right? Is the internal struggle that we all deal with. And I can totally relate. And I know a lot of listeners can relate to that too. Peter McKinnon, how did you meet that guy?
So Peter, I didn't know of him until I think it was like, I was around like 20 or 30 thousand subscribers, and he was really popping off already. I think he was like 200, yeah. 300. Peter's basically always 10 times better than me at anything. We do, he's always 10 times better. and then my now manager, actually Tyler, this was before he worked for me. He's like, oh, have you seen this guy, Peter? Like, he's doing really similar stuff to you. And I was like, oh, I hadn't heard of him. YouTube hadn't recommended him to me at all yet, which was surprising. But so I checked out his channel. I was like, oh, like, that's super cool. He's doing really cool stuff. And he lives near me, same age, like, look like very similar life situation. And so I just reached out to him. And luckily, it was like right before, you know, things got crazy big for him. Yeah. So he actually saw my email and we ended up hanging out, and we got along super well. And then I had this little gig, and it was in Italy and Switzerland, to go drive around Porsches with Olympus, testing yeah. out some new Olympus camera.
I remember seeing that video, actually.
Yeah. I was like, Peter, this is kind of weird. We just met, but like, do you want to go on this trip with me? And he's like, I mean, can't pass that up. So then we ended up going on that trip, and like, we just had such a good time, just got along super well. And yeah, the rest is history.
That's where the relationship moment was formed.
Yeah.
During that trip.
Yeah. Yep.
I remember watching that video, and like, the camera had like really good stabilization, but also yeah. it looked super wobbly and weird sometimes. And I remember yeah. watching your video, cause I was curious about it when that camera came out, and I was like, ew, like those wide angle shots are super wobbly.
But I think that's with any IBIS still. Like, we're going technical talk right now, but yeah, anytime, yeah. any camera that has IBIS, like whether it's a GH5 or even the, I just tested the Fujifilm X-T4, like yeah. if you put on a really wide lens, it's going to be wobbly on the corners.
Mm-hmm. The Olympus, ironically, EM1 Mark II now, they've done a firmware update that corrects it. And I shoot on that camera primarily now because all my gear got stolen. That's another story. But
that's wild. I've seen your social media posts. That's crazy.
So like my two ESRs and my Nikon Z6 and like everything has been stolen. And I just happened to only
so
have
sorry to hear
my
that,
Olympus.
Man.
So I'm like shooting primarily on it, and it's been a nice kind of minimalistic life to only have one camera and one lens. And I've actually really enjoyed the simplicity of it, but I was surprised at how good it's gotten with the firmware updates. So
that's literally how I would say 99% of my channel is one camera, one lens, at least for mm-hmm. the last like year, ever since the EOS R came out. I've literally, yeah. I used the 1DX for a while, but then like, 1DX has pretty bad, it has pretty bad dynamic range, and then it's heavy, it's big, it's and yeah. no flip LCD screen. And for me, for YouTube filmmaking, when you're filming yourself, a flip LCD screen is so important. And the EOS R, just the more I used it, the high bitrate, the codec, it's a really, yeah. really nice camera. And it's so funny how when it came out, I remember me and Peter both did videos on it, and I was skeptical still even when I tried it.
Yeah.
But after I used it for a bit, I was like, oh, this is the camera that I like most right now. I enjoy yeah. using it. And people could not believe it. Like, everybody thought that we were just getting paid to say it. Like, I think still to this day, people think I'm paid by Canon or something. But yeah. it's just for my style of filmmaking, my style of videos right now for YouTube, yeah. the EOS R is the best camera. I'm hoping the R5 changes that, makes that the best camera, because I always like, I get bored, of using the same camera. So I'm like, I want to try something new.
Yeah.
But I just haven't found a camera that I enjoy as much as the EOS R right now. And everybody that I know, people mocked it, and then they finally end up trying it, and they're sold, and they love it. It's the funniest thing to watch.
It's so funny how, like you said, when it first came out, and I was one of the haters on it, to be honest, because when you look at the specs and you compare it to at the time when the A7 III just came out, it was just eating its lunch. I mean, 4K full frame with IBIS and 4K crop, mirrorless, it was cheaper. But over the last couple of years now, I guess it's been 2 years almost.
Yep.
It's literally been like, yes, but the image looks better on the EOS R. So even though the specs are better on a Sony, like at the end of the day, people are looking at an image. They're not looking at the specs on a piece of paper. They're looking at the image. Also, I personally don't like the layout of the EOS R. I wish there was like a dedicated white balance and ISO button on the top. And I think the R5 is going to change that. Also, I hate that the microphone jack is in the way of the screen when it flips. So that's annoying.
Yeah.
And like, I never understood why they did that, because like the ADD had a great placement of the mic on it and stuff. And they, anyways, I'm going, you and I are very similar. We review cameras for a living. So we probably shouldn't go.
No camera's perfect. Yeah, no camera's perfect.
But it's exciting to see that it seems like Canon is listening, and it seems like they're making some big changes, with the R5. So we will see. Knock on wood. We'll have to do another interview after you have the R5 for a while and see what you think.
Yeah. I'm still so skeptical, because it's Canon's been playing the, relying that their cameras are better instead of just looking at specs. And like that worked, I think that works in like the higher end cameras, like when the C300 came out, C300 Mark II. I remember people were so underwhelmed by the C300. They were just like, this is a joke. Like there's already like FS700.
Well, the original one.
Yeah. FS700 did 180 frames per second and all this. And
then the C3, I remember the Red Scarlet came out the day that the C300 came out too.
And the C300 literally only basically did 24 frames per second. Like that's it. But you go to every mid-level, lower level production, everybody had a C300. They didn't have the Red or the Sony. Everybody had a C300. All the Vice docs, everybody was like, if it was documentary style, it was C300. And just because the image was so much nicer looking in the end. And so I think they try to do that.
Reliability was better.
Yeah, they try to do that also with the EOS R. But I think, no offense to the lower end camera people, like, they just don't understand it the same. And I think that was the big problem, especially when it came out. And then it just like, it literally takes you actually using it to start realizing like, actually this is a pretty good camera.
Also now, I think that with the price now, it's more worth it.
Yeah.
I bought one during Christmas, and I paid $12.99 for it. That is the perfect price point. Like,
that's cheap.
Yeah. There was a holiday special on it, over Christmas. And yeah, B&H was selling them for $12.99. So like $12.99, $15.99, that's much better than the $2,500 that they were charging when it first came out. So
yep, that's for sure.
Anyways, we should probably get off cameras, because people are either loving it or hating it. So it's a polarizing.
Everybody loves the camera talk.
Yeah. So, I mean, you started growing, 3 years ago, and started seeing some explosion there. And, collaboration is key for any YouTuber's growth strategy, and collaborating with Peter and Chris Howe and like all the amazing Canadians that you have access to out there. I mean, that's it's a funny topic. A lot of American creators are like, what the heck is up with all these ridiculously amazing Canadians that just all happen to live next to each other? It's so funny.
Weird phenomenon.
Also, Schiffer is out there too, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, it's so interesting how it's almost like the Canadian YouTubers created a genre in a way of this like you guys took what Casey Neistat was doing and like turned it into this amazing blend of high-end filmmaking, sexy B-roll with a review and a vlog and a tutorial. I mean, this was like 2-3 years ago, and I think in a way YouTube will forever be changed, and without that we wouldn't have seen, I mean, Potato Jet in his own right has done an amazing job too, but he's taken that to his own style and his own format, that kind of genre. I think it's interesting to see the shift. And then my friend Josh Yeo, we interviewed on the podcast from Make Art Now, he's doing like narrative filmmaking blended with reviews and stuff. It's so interesting to see the change that's happening on YouTube, because I feel like there was always just, if you're doing a gear review, it's just like, here's the specs, here's the B-roll from the camera, I'm going to film a chart and I'm going to like show you some examples and then that's it. And it's just like straight to the point. If you go outside of the point, you get comments that are like, will you just tell me what, you know, just give me the specs. I don't want to see all this like vlog stuff, you know, like how have you been able to blend the personality and the storytelling with a review? Because from the title, you're hooking people in with, you know, X-T4 review or whatever, but the actual review itself is only maybe half of the content, whereas the other half is this narrative vlog kind of personality stuff. You know, it's a new genre in its own way.
I think like I for sure was massively influenced by people like Casey Neistat. He's probably the biggest influence in the YouTube world for me. He was really what in the end like made me realize like, oh, like YouTube actually has some like really cool content. It's not just Charlie bit my finger on here. and so I watched his vlogs for a while, and I loved the feeling that I got from them and the storytelling that he was doing. And then I think people like me and Peter, we hit this like perfect wave where tutorials were just like very cut and dry, like here's the new Canon EOS RP, like these are the specs, this blah blah blah, you know, like just straight to the point, but like you really had no idea who this person was, why, you know, why are they talking about this camera, what's their life like, you know nothing about them. And so we kind of took that mix of adding more personality in our lives and then also having, I don't mean to sound arrogant, but having some skill to actually use the equipment also and make cool videos and make cinematic stuff. I think that blend was like a new thing that we just hit this perfect wave of like, nobody is doing this yet. And now obviously like everybody's doing what we're doing. And it's funny now for me, that kind of makes me also want to do more things like vlogging, because nobody can vlog like I vlog, because my life is unique to me. And so the more I show my unique, I'm not saying my life is any better or worse, but it's unique to me, the more I can show that uniqueness.
Yeah, exactly.
The more different I am from everybody else. And now I'm definitely bored of tutorials. Like I don't watch anybody else's tutorials. Whereas before I would watch, you know, all of Peter's tutorials and all of, you know, everybody's tutorials. I would watch them because I was like, oh, this is cool. And now I'm just like super bored of them because it kind of feels like all the tutorials have been done. But if somebody does vlogs, for example, Potato Jet, Gene, good friend of mine, he started his like separate vlog channel. And I actually like his vlog channel more than his main channel, because it's more like his normal life. I get to see what's going on. It's like little updates on his life. And I don't get to see that all the time because he lives in LA. So we only get to hang out every once in a while. But now I'm getting this like totally different look into his life. So yeah, it's interesting how things evolve.
It is, right? And I mean, gosh, he's splitting two channels and he's already working like crazy. That's nuts that he did that. But
yeah.
but no, I think it comes down to, again, like if you want to be a YouTuber in air quotes, you can listen to people like Daryl Eves, Think Media, you can Roberto Blake, and follow the rules of YouTube and like grow and work on your thumbnails and titles and like be extremely strategic about it. I mean, Mr. Beast is the perfect example. He followed all.
Yeah.
Like, he's like a genius and just studies the algorithm, and he found what worked, and now he's racking in millions and millions and millions and millions of views. But you, Peter, myself, Casey, Potato Jet, we're artists. Like, I don't really care. At the end of the day, an artist's job is to make art and to create art and do things that I want to do. That is the whole point of being an artist, is to express yourself. And I think it's important for people to remember, especially people who are listening to this, like, it, yes, you want to do the right things on YouTube so that you can make a living. But at the end of the day, if you're going to have a smaller audience, but you're actually fulfilled in doing what you actually love, then do that. Like, at the end of the day, it's a long journey and you want to be creatively fulfilled. Do you resonate with that?
It's funny, because like, I totally understand where you're coming from. But like I said earlier, I don't feel like an artist at all. I don't have this okay. I get creative gratification or fulfillment out of making videos and posting them and people commenting on stuff like that. But I don't have this like, I need to make art kind of like thing. I hated art class in high school, and like English was the worst class. Anything that was subjective, anything that the teacher could decide whether this was good or not, I hated. I liked sciences, math, anything that like, if I knew my stuff, I'm good, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, it's more of a, instead of I want to create art, for me, it's more like, I want to share a feeling. I want to express a point or a thing about something. Like, if I can make somebody smile or just, you know, be in a good mood or just like, mm-hmm. just brighten up their day a little bit. If I can spread some positivity, whether it's through a tutorial or a camera review or just a vlog with my kid, like that is way more valuable to me. And I think that's the thing I love most about people like Casey Neistat, is like, he was literally inspiring millions and millions of people, not just every day to like, oh, like I'm gonna hustle today, you know, like I feel inspired, but like also actually inspiring people to, you know, go at their dreams and all that kind of stuff. So I think for me, that's more of a drive for me than that, like, well, I need to make art.
Well, maybe the word art is throwing you off, because the definition of art is, I just looked it up, something that is created with imagination and skill that is beautiful or that expresses important ideas or feelings. That is the definition of art. So a vlog to you might not feel like art, like going to art school, but it is like you're expressing yourself through your skills and talents.
So. Yeah. I think a lot of people,
Vimeo staff pick, lifestyle, right? Of like trying to make sexy, edgy, artistic films, you know, and being kind of pretentious about it.
So for me, it's kind of like the which goes first, which is more important. Like, and so I'm thinking about the idea or the topic first, and then I let my creativity, like, okay, like, oh, this is a cool way of telling the story. Whereas I think a lot of like true artists, and there's nothing wrong with this, it's just not how my brain works. A lot of the true artists are like, I have this like crazy vision to do this cool thing. And I just don't, my brain doesn't work like that. Like I have an idea of like, oh, I want to compare these two cameras or I want to talk about the, you know, I posted a video about the Canon RP today. Like I want to talk about like, is it the most underrated camera of 2020? Cause it's been on my mind for so long. And so that's just like an idea I had. And then there's all these small little mini stories within that one topic, that like, that get me pumped, you know, when there's like a funny, what I think is funny or like a thing that makes me smile, even watching it back, like I get pumped on that stuff.
Well, I mean, you did do, these films, you know, you did Potato Jet, Jesse Driftwood. I don't know what you got in the work.
Was supposed to do Becky and Chris, except, you know, the world is all crazy right now.
How have you enjoyed doing those? Has that been a nice creative outlet for you? Do you like doing those?
Yeah, I've always loved and been fascinated with documentaries, and maybe that's why I like vlogging also, because it's like essentially, it's not just, vlogging isn't one video, it's the compilation of all the videos that creates this documentary. That's kind of how I see it in my mind. And so I've always loved documentaries, and that's why I started the Being series, like showing the actual what it's like being a YouTuber or social media person, and maybe it'll branch into other areas. But I think people have such a different view of what it's like to be somebody else. And so I just wanted to show a little bit of like, what is it actually like? Because I think everybody like idolizes somebody. I wish I could be that person. I wish I could be in their situation. Doesn't matter what your situation, people are always looking at other people wishing like I could be there. And then when you actually see, you know, what it's like, it's not as easy as you think, and they don't have it all figured out, and they're not perfect in any way. And so like, I kind of wanted to show a little bit of that, because I know my life, I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh, I wish I could be a YouTuber like Maddie. And then they don't see all the hard work and the hard things that come with it. And so I guess, again, it's like, I wanted to show that aspect. And then the Being series was just like a perfect way of doing it in my mind, like a raw documentary.
I'm briefly interrupting this podcast with Maddie to tell you about the Light Chaser Pro mobile filter system for the iPhone 11 and Galaxy S20 Ultra. The iPhone 11 Pro and Galaxy S20 Ultra systems are changing the game in mobile content creation. The cameras on these flagship phones are seriously getting to the level of professional cameras. If you want to push the boundaries of what a mobile phone can accomplish, then you need to check out the Light Chaser system. The complete creative system is built specifically for mobile filmmakers and photographers to deliver shots never before possible on mobile devices. By controlling unwanted light before it enters your lens with our mobile optimized variable neutral density filter and circular polarizer. With the VND filter on your phone, you can now get the cinematic looking shots you always wanted with the device in your pocket with ease. In addition to a filter system for your phone, you also get a rugged case and adjustable hand grip, making hand holding your phone much more natural and more like a real camera. The grip also includes a 1/4-20 thread on it, so you can use your phone on tripods, gimbals, and whatever else you want to mount your phone onto. To learn more about the Light Chaser Pro mobile filter system, check it out on our website at polarpro.com. All right, now let's get back to the show. So when it comes to making your videos, you mentioned a little bit of how your mind works. Do you script things? Do you have like a notes doc? I'm just always fascinated with like every creator's kind of workflow. Can you go through like how you approach a video?
Yes.
And what your process is?
So for me, just like it's that logical brain. I feel like I need some sort of outline. So literally, I think pretty much every single video I've ever made on my channel, maybe minus like one or two, has had some sort of like game plan. Like, this is the idea that I want to talk about, or this is the camera I'm going to review. And then I'll kind of like come up with like what's like the main thing, and then I'll come up with points that tell that main thing, or that show that main thing. So I might script out, or like bullet point like a intro, some of the main points, and then like an outro or something like that. But that's like a really rough outline. And how I do it is, I know as long as I cover those points at some point in the video, I know I have a cohesive, good video. That like, if to me, it's always if somebody watches the video and then I ask them, what was that video about? And if they can answer with kind of the answer that I like the topic that I had in mind, then in that case, I've succeeded. If they don't know what the video is about, then I've lost, and they've just kind of like, maybe they got entertained, but they didn't really get much out of it. So I have that outline. And then as things happen throughout the day, I'll just like, I'll keep that idea in my mind, but I'll kind of like, if something happens with like, you know, I'm on a run and I see something, like that fits the topic perfectly, I'll film that. If it has nothing to do with anything, or maybe it's just a little bit entertaining, I might film it. But if it has nothing to do with anything, then I'm like the topic, then I'm not gonna film it. So it kind of gives me like a box to work within, giving me a little bit of structure, but I still keep it pretty free flow.
And how many, when you're not doing vlogs, what is your kind of standard upload schedule? Do you do 2 a week or 1 a week or?
Yeah, usually I think it averages around 2, anywhere between 1 and 3, I think, when I haven't been doing these little daily vlogs.
Yeah. And what's your workflow look like now that you have Matt as your editor?
So usually it's been, I come up with an idea, I film it, Matt might help me with some of the filming, and then I'll hand the footage to Matt, explain the idea, and then usually my videos, literally anybody could edit them because I have that structure. It's pretty mm-hmm. clear what the idea is. You don't need to, pretty much everything I shoot goes into the video, pretty much. I'd say like 97%.
Is it pretty linear?
Yeah, pretty linear most of the time. Yeah, it's more rare that I'm like splicing things around or like filming a bit one day and then filming another bit the next day. I try to finish a video every single day, just like it makes my brain feel good. So yeah, that's how I work. And then yeah, so then Matt will edit, and then I'll take a look at what he's done, and then we'll review, make changes. I might do some of the editing just because like pacing and timing and things like that are really hard to explain sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just need to play around with it to see like what, like this doesn't feel right and I'm not sure exactly why. And so like, I just need to play around with it a little bit to figure it out. And then yeah, he'll export it, upload it, and then I'll just put in the details of the video, make the thumbnail and all that. And then we post.
Do you play around with titles and thumbnails? Do you really, you know, experiment with that a lot? Or is it pretty straightforward?
So that's like one of the things that frustrates me a little bit about YouTube right now. It's like, it's very, YouTube is very much favoring click-through rates. So that's like when a video gets suggested, the title and thumbnail, if people are clicking on that video or not.
Yeah.
Based on the title and thumbnail, obviously. And so like if your video gets suggested to 100 people and 20 of those people click on it, that's a pretty high click-through rate, and you're going to get high views on that video. And so I try not to think about it too much, because if mm-hmm. you think about it too much, you're always going to go the route of clickbaiting people more so. And clickbait isn't bad, but then it easily crosses the line of like, you're just lying. Like it's not what you're actually talking about, or you're embellishing and I don't like that. I wish I could just call the video what it is, but YouTube doesn't fit. That's why somebody like Mr. Beast thrives right now, because every single video idea is essentially just taking any little idea and taking it to the point that it's interesting. So like, last person to let go of this coffee cup gets the coffee. Like mm-hmm. nobody cares about that. Last person to let go of this $100 bill gets the $100 bill. Maybe some people care about that. Last person to let go of $1 million, I need to find out how this, like, what happens, who gets it. Like, no matter who it is, you see that title and thumbnail and you're at least curious. Like, you have to fight yourself not to click on it. And so Mr. Beast just takes any idea to that point.
Yeah.
But there's very little storytelling. There's very, like, I think Mr. Beast is awesome. He does a great job. Mm-hmm. But there's very little storytelling. There's very little, like, there's definitely positivity and makes you laugh and all that stuff, but it's kind of really basic in storyline.
Yeah.
And so that's the one part about YouTube that kind of, I guess, annoys me. I actually just tweeted about that today, that like I wish YouTube, the algorithm, didn't favor it as much, because in the end that just leads to more clickbait titles and thumbnails.
Yeah.
Instead of like the good old days of like, you know, somebody like Casey Neistat would post a video and it would just be like just some random title of like, you know, she's bad at this. And it's like, I have no idea what that is, but like, I like Casey's videos and it's getting suggested to me, so I'm going to watch it.
Well, yeah, when you get to that size, now with, I mean, David Dobrik, any video that he posts, I watch it, you know, so
Yeah.
If you're at that level, and you're definitely there for sure for the core audience, they're going to just watch everything you make,
but it makes a massive difference. Like if my click-through rate, let's say, I don't know what that numbers are exactly, but let's say it averages 10%, mm-hmm. let's say. And then one video gets a 6% click-through rate. So like the title and thumbnail just weren't as appetizing.
Yeah.
That video might only, right now when I'm doing these daily vlogs, the views are a little bit lower because I'm posting every day. Sounds counterintuitive in some ways, but that's how it is right now with YouTube. That video might get 30,000 views. And then today I looked and like the click-through rate was much higher, or like a few percent higher than what it normally is. And the video is getting 44 or 45% more views than it normally does. And so that's purely based on the fact that the title and thumbnail were more enticing in a way.
And also it's
not because they like my content, like it's not based on that,
but it's also more in line with your niche, or the majority of your followers are interested in camera gear, and the title is most underrated camera of 2020. So more of your audience is just going to be naturally more attracted to that versus something else, you know, that's not related to cameras potentially.
But if the same video, if I called it, for example, so right now the title is most underrated camera of 2020 question mark.
Yeah.
And then it's my face so people can recognize me. And then I'm holding a camera, but it's covered with like a circle and a question mark.
Yeah.
If I had just held up the EOS RP, which is what the video is about, and said EOS RP review.
Yeah.
That same video, same topic, same like
nothing
would
else.
Get much less much less views just because people wouldn't be as enticed to click on that video.
Totally.
So they're having to click on the video to find out what the camera that I'm talking about is, what camera I'm talking about that's underrated. And so just that fact now gets me a higher click through, and that means I get more views. And so it's not just the topic that decides. And so, I mean, there's no right answer. Before, like the YouTube algorithm would heavily favor any video that has a lot of views. That was like the Charlie bit my finger days.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, okay, how do we distinguish what's a good video? And so they're like, oh, well, watch time. Like if people are watching a video for a long time, it must be good. And so then that's when like every channel started making a vlog channel, and that vlog channel got bigger than their main channel just because the videos were easy to make long and the watch times would be high because of that. Watch times, like I think they average probably between 40 and 60% normally. So like if your video is 10 minutes versus 3 minutes, well that 40 to 60% is going to be way long more watch time on the 10 minute video. And so that kind of broke the algorithm. And then now they've kind of gone into this click through, maybe looking at a little bit more of like all the stats, but it's definitely heavily, heavily favoring the click through rate.
Yeah. I mean, it's a living, breathing beast that is ever changing. And that's just the nature of it, right? I guess. So you're totally right about that. And it can be frustrating to be on top of it, but you're doing a great job. And yeah, I mean, it can be daunting for people who are starting out because you might know how to make good videos, but you have to learn all this stuff. It's a completely different thing to learn. So,
yeah, I think that's the main thing is to essentially just ignore all of it. Like try to play the game a little bit, and more importantly, just try to make great content. But in the end, not going with the feelings. And when a video does bad or does well, like not thinking about that too much. Because what usually happens is people will dictate their content based on what does well in views. And that might work in the short term, but it might not actually be that good for you long term for a few different reasons. Like A, if you do your hero videos that get the most views every single day, well, then those just get boring, right?
Yeah.
Like eventually it's not special anymore. And then B, most likely you don't like making that same type of video all the time. And now you've kind of pigeonholed yourself to only be that person that makes these kinds of videos. And now you don't like making them anymore. You're super bored of it. And so like in the long term, like you're saying, we're going to be doing this for 20, 30 years. We're going to be working for a long time. And so like if you, yeah, it, in the short term, it might look like this is the way I should go. But then in the long term, you're actually hurting yourself.
What are some challenges you think the next generation of creators are going to be facing?
Ooh, some challenges. I definitely don't think it's too late for anybody to start, but I think it's becoming more and more saturated all the time. More and more people are wanting to be YouTubers and Instagrammers and stuff. And so like, that's one thing, but I think probably the bigger struggle is the lack of control. Anybody who's done social media, whether it's YouTube or Instagram or whatever for a longer period of time, is frustrated by the fact that the platform will change and it can easily kind of leave you behind, or it'll force you to change with it even though you don't want to change in that direction. And so like Instagram, you know, I know a lot of Instagrammers used to grow tons and then now they're just losing followers, and no matter how many times they post or whatever they do, it's not helping. You know, same with YouTube. Some people have started out one way and one video pops off, but that's not necessarily the direction they want to go, and so then they try to make some different kind of content and then that ends up hurting them. Or you know, like vloggers, I don't think any vlogger is doing as well anymore just because, you know, the algorithm changed, and so that can affect people right away.
Yeah.
So it's that lack of control, because in the end, you might own your channel, but you don't own YouTube or Instagram or whatever you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, it is getting more saturated, but like you said earlier, there's only one you, and there's only one person with your perspective. So even if you are doing the same thing that every other person is doing, you can do it differently than everyone, because it's you and nobody's like you.
Yeah.
So we got some AMA questions on Twitter that I reached out on Twitter, and you and I both are totally Twitter fans. I can't stand anything else, and I barely go on Instagram because I'm such a Twitter guy, but I know you're probably more into Instagram than me, but
No, I'm full on Twitter. I don't like Instagram much at all. Other than stories, I think Instagram is so boring.
Yeah, you just kind of have to do it. Like, I've thought about deleting my Instagram, to be honest, but it's like, I'm on the internet, I have to have it. But
I don't like posting on Instagram too much, like photos and stuff like that, but I like doing stories because they're almost like mini vlogs or mini little bits. And so like I like doing stories, so I just use it in the way that I enjoy using it. Again, I'm sure I could have way more followers if I was posting more often and stuff like that, but I just don't care. Like, again, it's short term versus long term. I want to enjoy what I'm doing versus like trying to grow the fastest that I can.
But you have like literally three times as many followers on Instagram as Twitter, and yet Twitter's like where your heart is, right? It's the same for me, but anyways, it doesn't matter. I love Twitter. All right, so we got a question from Jake on Twitter. Would he ever move to the States?
Probably not. Like, I don't think Americans realize, like, so I was born in Finland and then I live in Canada. So I've lived half of my life in Finland, half in Canada. Canada, we have free healthcare. We have, you know, unemployment insurance. You're covered. Like, it's a super safe place to live. No matter, even in Toronto, it's like, it's the biggest city in Canada, and I could go anywhere in Toronto and feel totally safe. And then Finland is even more extreme in that, like, you have free university, free daycare for your kids, free healthcare. Like, you're seriously covered. And so, like, instead of your taxes going to who knows what, you actually get some benefits from your taxes. Maybe they're a little bit higher, but to me, it just makes sense. Like, when you're when you're making money, you pay a little bit more. And when you don't have money, like when you're in school, well, then you shouldn't be paying a ton of money. So just having that background, like living in America in a lot of ways scares the crap out of me. So
at Spencer Hart asks, what's been his most fulfilling project he's ever worked on?
The most fulfilling? Oh, that's a tough one. I think I still don't have like, I don't, probably a lot of people think like this. I feel like I don't have that one project that I can just like, that I can point to and be like, that's the thing that was like the best. One of the, I did a little documentary with my, or it was my friend's documentary in Dominican Republic on this. Essentially there, they don't have like an ambulance service for the locals. So like if somebody gets in a car accident, there's no ambulance coming to pick you up. And so there's these like volunteer people who do it. And most of them were like 17, 18 year old kids, like young kids doing this crazy work. And so that was like, that was really inspiring. But on my YouTube channel, I probably, the Being series is probably like the most fulfilling for me. It's a ton of work, but I really like the outcome.
Yeah. Well, to end this out, I'd love for you to just leave our listeners with kind of just your last thoughts, inspiration, words of wisdom. Like if somebody is starting out, they want to be doing what you're doing, you know, what is, this is kind of the default question, but I think from your experience, people can learn a lot from that. What's kind of your message to the world, if you will, to kind of be a creative, a creator on YouTube?
Stop listening to me right now. Pick up your camera and learn, make, repeat. Like that's my thing. Just learn stuff, make stuff, keep repeating that over and over again. As long as you're taking like one step forward at a time, like I would have never imagined that this is where I would be in you know, 5 years from now. I could have never imagined that this is what I would be doing. But you just take that one step at a time forwards, learn, make, repeat, and crazy things can happen.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Maya Apoya, not the serial killer, the YouTuber. It's been a pleasure interviewing you, and I really appreciate taking your time to talk to us today.
Yeah, super nice talking to you, man.
Yeah, man. Have a good one. Thanks a lot.
All right. See ya.
See ya. I hope you guys enjoyed my conversation with Maddie Apoya. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on your social media. Screenshot your phone and post about it on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, whatever you want to help get the word out about this show. We love having amazing guests on like Maddie, and we have another amazing guest next week, Caleb Pike from DSLR Video Shooter. So make sure to subscribe to the Golden Hour Podcast in Apple Podcasts now to be notified when the next show goes live. If you don't subscribe to Maddie's YouTube channel yet, then I highly recommend it to you all, and I think you can learn a lot from it. Go find him on YouTube by just searching his name. Thank you all again for listening to the Golden Hour Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Dave Mays, and we'll see you next week with Caleb Pike. Bye.